Welcome to the Leading for Impact podcast, where we spotlight influential leaders in the nation's second largest school district, LA Unified. I am Jamie Galgana, Instructional Leadership Support Specialist with LAUSD's Instructional Technology Initiative, and I'm here with this episode's co-host and Readiness and Integration Coordinator, Allison Jonas.
Hi, thank you. I'm so excited to be here and co-host this episode on generative AI and how it's being used with instruction.
The Leading for Impact podcast brings you the voices of leading experts and practitioners who are making a positive impact on teaching and learning in their communities for all learners and families. Today, we are speaking with the principal at the Science Academy STEM Magnet, Mr. Carlos Lauchu, assistant principal Joshua Rosenthal, teacher, innovation lab, technology, and AP computer science teacher Christopher Bradfield, and parent, Caltech PhD in engineering and venture capitalist, also the STEM advisor to the Science Academy STEM Magnet, Tom Tsao. Join me in welcoming this amazing team to the Leading for Impact podcast. Welcome all.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. As we get started, I want to start with Principal Lauchu to set the stage. Can you share with us a brief history of your path in education and the history of the Science Academy STEM Magnet?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. My path in education started around 1997, shortly after my son was born. I was a substitute, and my first assignment was to North Hollywood High School. I really enjoyed teaching math and science at North Hollywood, but I wanted to work with younger kids, so I moved to Millikan Middle School, which is now Louis Armstrong. I taught the sciences and some math. After a few years, I created a program with my partner, Jody Huff, called the Science Academy under the roof of Millikan Middle School. The Science Academy was a three-year program, sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade, and we focused on science. And I started backward mapping my instruction because I had them for 3 years. So I implemented a few things. I started teaching advanced placement in the middle school. My kids started taking the advanced placement exams. I had a 98 to 99% passing rate and got a little bit of attention from the college board and the superintendent. The superintendent ended up coming out and asking a few questions and sharing some time with me in the classroom. And eventually the offer came in to create a school, the Science Academy STEM School. And the program continued until a few years later when asked if it was possible to create a seven-year program and create a magnet school, the Science Academy STEM Magnet. Keith downtown, the head of magnet schools, was very supportive and very instrumental in making that happen. And that's pretty much how the school was created.
That's great. So you have over 27 years of experience and in different capacities from substitute now to principal. I was able to connect with you at the Principal Leadership Institute this past summer while participating in the Artificial Intelligence and Education breakout session. What did you hope to learn?
I was hoping to learn more about how AI could be implemented in education, what some of the thoughts were, especially coming from LAUSD, what their ideas were, what they would like to see, and what opportunities there might be utilizing AI for the kids of our district.
Great, thank you. And what resonated with you from that session?
Several things. The definition of AI, as the district was able to put forward, you know, using keywords like leveraging computers and machines and the simulation of human intelligence, resonated with me. Also, debunking the myths surrounding AI. Myths such as using AI in education is going to make our students, quote unquote, dumber, or that AI is going to take over jobs and AI is going to control the world and only big companies can utilize AI. It's not really something we can utilize on a smaller setting such as schools. I really felt that was important. I was happy to see that the district embraced this new technology. I was happy to see the district's standing was not to ban it from the classroom, but to find a path in order to utilize it more efficiently for our kids. I was happy to see that the district is going to take a leading role and that they were going to provide training and support for schools and teachers. And I was really happy to hear that the district felt that there were positive possibilities for AI, both on the instruction side for teachers and for student learning.
Yes, training, support, positive use, and coming from the district level around policy and implementation. And with that, we all know that this work cannot be done alone, especially when leading a large school. So thank you for bringing your team with you today, and wanted to open it up to thinking about why is it important for your teachers and students to have an understanding around AI? And then we'll hand it off to your team.
Well, you know, AI is not going anywhere. It is going to be a part of our society from now and forevermore. It's really important to be able to learn how to utilize a tool like this to increase proficiency, both in school and in the workplace and just throughout our culture. You can take it from the viewpoint of something that is negative and non-constructive or from the viewpoint of something that will enhance student proficiency. I'd like to kick it off to some of my colleagues, and I'd like to thank them all for being here and supporting in this. What do you guys think?
Well, when we started to hear about AI at schools, it was coming from the students and the teachers and how students might be writing essays now that we have to discover how much of it, what percentage of it was written by an AI. And it started with fear. So we had to work quickly to change the framing of all that. How are we going to utilize it and start there as a starting point with AI? So that's where we reached out to teachers at our meetings, and we're talking to the kids and trying to figure out where that launching point is so that we can actually utilize it as a tool. We see it as a great tool, just like the internet was an amazing tool that hit the world. Has it had negative consequences? Absolutely. But, you know, as Mr. Lauchu was saying, there's so many different ways to look at what it can do for us.
Well, I would say, practically speaking, as a computer science teacher, I'm concerned not just with the students understanding how to use these tools, but I want them to understand how they're made. Because these students that I'm teaching now are going to go to college. They're going to major in computer science, many of them. These are going to be the people who are working on these systems and building the next generation of them. And so my goal with AI, since it has been, you know, blossoming in the public consciousness, is to make sure the students understand how they're made, what biases can be implicit in them, because there's a lot of real-world examples of, you know, the garbage in, garbage out kind of situation where AIs can be, the results of a particular model can be skewed based on what was used to train it. And so we spend a lot of time in class talking about that and talking about those examples and looking at what that social impact is, not just the technological one.
I'm just curious, what was some of the feedback that your students gave you around this conversation?
It's always a very interesting conversation because a lot of people aren't aware of how extensive these things are. And even for the past decade, whether it's systems at banks that decide who gets a mortgage and who doesn't, There are tools that are used in courtroom sentencing to just tell the judge how long should this person be sent to jail. And there are multiple examples of those things having implicit racial bias, class bias, built into them because of the data that was used to train them. And it's really important to understand that those things happen, and we shouldn't accept what the AI tells us just because it tells us.
Yeah, as a school leader, we really need to do some of the things that Chris is doing. We need to evolve our practice, our pedagogy. And as a system overall in LAUSD, we need to address this new technology and create new strategy for implementation so that all students are proficient in AI when they leave the classroom and that they have access to it while they're here with us in K-12.
I know much of this podcast is probably aimed for how can we use AI across the 400,000 students of LAUSD. But being the Science Academy, teachers here are trying to educate the students on how to develop AIs, which if I can talk for a minute about that, I think there may be interest out there in how can you, it's not a mysterious box. It's still math and programming and whatnot. As early as in sixth grade, I remember when my kids were in his class, he had them quote-unquote program in AI, but not using a computer. There's a very simple math game called NIM, which is basically you have an array of, let's say, quarters on a table. It's a two-person game, and you take turns taking away one or two coins, and whoever has last coin wins. And you can do something called reinforcement learning. Without using a computer, you can just have different cups with different states in there, and kids can play the game against, quote-unquote, an AI, and the AI will learn how to win without having any knowledge of what the rules are. Just this is the outcome. It's a win or a loss. And the students, with using their hands, not using a computer, gained, I believe, an intuitive feeling of how AI works. It's not mysterious. It's, oh, this works. Those are sort of things that Chris teaches in his class. There's another teacher we have here who also in sixth grade teaches the kids all to code so that by the time they get to Chris's class, everyone is well set for that. I do want to talk about one other thing. Josh, who's our assistant principal here, he used to be a math teacher. And the way he teaches math is really to have the kids look at all angles of the problem. One of the programs he spearheaded at our school was, given that our students are very interested in science, engineering, he reached out to find all these PhDs, these high-level industry figures from across the country, from across the planet, to come give talks to our school. And twice he brought in this educational AI institute from Germany to come in and give talks to the kids on what AI is. And so the kids really understood, oh, here's what we can do with this. Here's, and really gave wonderful exposure so that I think that the next generation of AI developers will probably come from kids like the students we have here. And also from that, the kids understood that we need to have this type of math, that type of math to be able to program AIs in the future. And with that in mind, because some professors said, your kids are really bright, but before they can do work for us, they need to know linear algebra, differential equations, multivariable calculus, things that aren't typically taught in a high school setting. But Josh developed a math class, is in the process of developing a math class to allow our kids to be able to really program the AIs, really get into the guts of it. And so that's something I think is very special about our school. Now, starting with Principal Lao Chu, is really, really enabled the community to come together to figure out how can we be at the forefront of this technology.
One of the advantages we have is that we're a span school, so we have them for 7 years. So we start this in sixth grade with our, you know, all of our students learn coding in sixth grade. In eighth grade, they get Mr. Bradfield, and later on in high school, they get him for, it's the Science Discoveries class, and they get to pick areas that they are interested in. They get to do hands-on science. They get to do the science in supplement with the science that they're learning at a high level, of course. It's the Science Academy. But then they have sci-tech and research when they get into high school where they can pursue the research end of it. And then they get back in 11th grade to AP Computer Science, which 100% of our kids pass the AP exam. Thank you, Mr. Bradfield. And then in 12th grade, they get the capstone to that, which is the game design. Now, if you're thinking of this as a pathway, how are we leading the kids through this? We're creating this honors discrete math class. It really incorporates what the kids are learning in computer science. They'll be able to use computer science to do the math, and they're going to get that type of math that they don't get in the normal trajectory through calculus. They're going to get this other math where it includes logic and multivariable calculus and linear algebra, which is the math that you need to know to be able to create AI. And when they get to college, not only will they have had all this experience at our school, but they'll have a foundation for going further with it at the next level.
I love hearing that you have this clear pathway for your middle school and high school. It's a district initiative that we are promoting and pushing, that all students in LA Unified has computer science education, specifically in middle school having at least a minimum of one required elective, and then high school clear pathway, which you identified. What's going to be great for you all already having this pathway 6 through 12 is at the elementary level that we're asking teachers to have 20 hours minimum of computer science education instruction integrated in the core curriculum. So hopefully when they get here in sixth grade, they already have like an initial like for it, or an awareness of what it is.
Sure.
So thank you for sharing that pathway.
You know, as a school leader, you want to make sure that your community is comfortable with technology. One of the things that you don't want is you don't want your students to feel like they can't be trusted with technology, which is the message that you're sending if you're banning AI from schools. If you're telling your teachers, okay, now you've got to use pen and paper instead of a computer. If you're using AI plagiarism software, the message that you're sending is, okay, we don't trust our kids with technology. And that is the opposite, the antithesis of what we want to do here at the Science Academy STEM Magnet. So through the use of backwards mapping a program that utilizes something that's already in place, our pathway of computer science, and embedding AI into that existing pathway that we have, 6 through 12, hopefully that'll achieve our goal of making sure that our community is comfortable with it and literate so that they can apply what they're learning and continue on to post-secondary education.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that also helps dispel those myths that when the kids are comfortable with not just using but understanding how AI works at the middle school level, it just becomes another tool. It's another tool in their toolbox, like computers were, like calculators were, that helps to solve problems.
Just to add on to that a little bit about the pathway, the sixth grade science teacher, he introduces every single student in sixth grade to robotics, gets them a basis for that. And then some develop a greater interest, some move on to other sciences, but we have a competitive robotics program here. And once you get into high school, there's the opportunity to use AI for that. So there is a version of the VEX that we do, which is called VEX AI, where the robots don't have human control. They have cameras, they have other sensors that can tell what's around them and identify there is an opponent robot, I should avoid that robot. Here's a block, that's my goal, I want to go grab that block, things like that. So you can imagine it's like a self-driving car, except it's contained within a 12 by 12 foot field, and you know, you have very limited tasks that you're trying to accomplish. I think what we're training the students here is to be able to develop the next generation of self-driving cars, because they'll have actually done that sort of work while being a student here, which is also AI programming.
Yeah, I could really see the examples that you're sharing about how AI is developed at your school, starting from an unplugged example of reasoning and how AI works, and then graduating into that honors discrete math class. I think there's a lot that our listeners could learn from this school about how to possibly roll that out at their school site. And it certainly takes some time to do. So we're really grateful that you could share some of your learnings and your examples about what you do here. I guess with that said, what are maybe some tips that you might have on how other schools might get started if they haven't started yet around AI?
Well, schools that don't have any sort of, you know, and I guess we have, you know, a slight advantage there. We are a STEM school, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. So we already have embedded in our mission and vision this whole concept of making sure that our kids are well-versed in science and technology, you know. And there are schools out there that are humanities schools and performing arts schools. And that's, I think it's awesome. I think students need to be well-rounded. I myself have a performing arts background, and it was one of the best parts of my life. So I think it's very important. Schools need to really think about and embrace technology in a way that can become more facilitatory for their students if they haven't done so already. STEM schools, it's going to be a little bit easier for them than perhaps a performing arts school. But there's always a way.
Yeah, and there's plenty of opportunity to integrate these tools into humanities content as well. One of our history teachers was telling me the other day, they were talking about the Declaration of Independence and how it was the most famous breakup letter in history, right? And she actually incorporated, had the students use ChatGPT to rewrite it as if it was written today. Right? Because how would it be written today as opposed to the 18th century? And it was kind of a fun way for them to explore, right, what were the things that led up to this happening and what were they trying to say, you know, with this document. Similar in English classes, you can really use it as a tool to help analyze your writing, not just write for you, but tell you how you can improve your writing. It's a great feedback tool.
Right. And earlier you had mentioned the social impact. So I think that spans all of the different disciplines, especially when it comes to critical media literacy and what deep fakes look like in media. So I think that's important that you're also highlighting how this learning can be applied across different curricula.
I'd like to add, we talked about how it's integrated and embedded into curriculum. I see it in the classroom, in English class, and in math or in science. But isolated in those subjects would not be good enough, I don't think, if we're trying to recommend this to other schools and how they would implement it. We're talking about all of these enrichment opportunities that we offer. Mm-hmm. Those provide real experiences outside of the curriculum that give that association, which is how we learn. We learn by associating things with experiences. I would recommend to other schools that they find a way to create enrichment or develop enrichment in technology, including artificial intelligence, and embed it into their curriculum so that when they're doing it in the curriculum, it's not isolated, it's associated with all of this enrichment, all of these enrichment opportunities. And I think that if you're going to do that, it needs to be comprehensive that way.
Yeah, and for example, in a history class, you may be studying the outbreak of cholera in the 19th century, and you can immediately shift gears then and talk about, well, how do data scientists today analyze outbreaks and epidemics? How is analyzing that data different today than it was back in, with the tools they had in that time?
I think the environment that Carlos and Josh have created here as administrators, I think, A, they want the school to be great, not just to survive, but to be great. And as part of that, they really welcome the community in. I think what you want is leadership that embraces greatness. It's easy for schools to say we're welcoming, but really Josh and Carlos are incredibly encouraging the community to come in. And then you bring in different people. As another example of someone that Josh found recently, this is going to be a future student, an incoming student, mm-hmm. whose father is a professor at UCLA in quantum material science. And so this professor is going to come in, teach a little bit, do some seminars, and possibly even lead to internships. Who knows? Yeah. But that's because of the environment that they've set up that says, please, come on in, share your knowledge. What can you offer to the students? That fundamental philosophy, I think, has to be key if you want to be at the forefront of any new technology.
I love that. Really embracing the community, inviting those families in, because they have a wealth of knowledge that they could also bring to the students at the school. So creating that environment is
amazing. You have
to be
able to tap it. A, you have to know that it exists.
Yeah.
And then B, you have to welcome that in. They've done that here. Yeah, Carlos and Josh have done a wonderful job of that here.
When you talk about advice for other schools, I think it definitely starts with the staff. You have to really invest some time and energy in bringing everybody up to speed with how these tools work, because that's going to spark the ideation of, well, now I can see how I can use this in my classroom. Right. You know, and as teachers, we always have tons of things coming at us from every direction and new ideas, and there's never enough time in the day to figure out which ones, you know, are worth pursuing and which ones you need to put on the back burner. Mm-hmm. But taking that time and investing that time to understand the tools will really give you that perspective to say, you know, regardless of your subject matter, mm-hmm. here's a way I could incorporate that and spark that discussion of, and then we can collaborate on doing it across these different subject matters and things like that.
Yeah, it's important for them to build that awareness that you're talking about, but also knowing that our district has policy that backs this learning around artificial intelligence.
Yeah, the responsible use policy has been revised to include language around generative AI and the use of it. So you're getting students and parents to already build that awareness when they're signing that document. There's also an IOC that's put out in our office correspondence for educators, principals, to learn what is a district doing from the central office down to the school sites and what is available around the training, the education, the policy, and how the district is approaching generative AI. And we also have a new mandatory Schoology course for our 13 and up students to take and connected to digital citizenship district-wide. So that's also new out. We have a lot of new things coming out for you all, and we're working on that communication out to you all so you have it at your fingertips.
That's great. And I think people here especially are chomping at the bit to knock out the official requirements and get ready to use it. We also have individuals here who are testing other types of AI in a sandbox, right? So that when district policy allows it that these will and vendors are approved that teachers will be able to use them.
I was playing around in the sandbox with how to make a master schedule, and it holds all the information you put in and you can add to it. So if you start with a simple foundation, actually, and you keep prompting it, you can keep increasing the complexity step by step. So I'm curious to see what can we do with master scheduling, or how do we look at data and analyze it in a way that maybe the human eye doesn't catch, and they're picking up trends that we didn't see, you know? So, and then what about for the teacher or for the student or for the parent? I'm also chomping at the bit to see where we can go for all the stakeholders, not just for the students.
And we're planning to set up a PD or a training for our community, our parents, to introduce them to some of the AI concepts and ideas. So we want to make sure that they're on board with it as well.
And I think a big part of that also is, again, as you mentioned earlier, to dispel myths, mm-hmm. right? A lot of parents don't dive into the weeds necessarily. So I think we can handhold them to show, here's the tool, here's how it can really benefit your student. You need to be aware of the risks, right? It's a tool.
It goes back to what one of you said in the beginning, where you started with fear and then really open it up to those conversations and look at where you are now.
It's not so scary
no
once you talk
fear.
About it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Ongoing yeah. dialogue.
And it's a great conversation with the parents.
Absolutely.
And it's even less scary once you start using it.
Yes. To see how beneficial and useful it is for your day-to-day tasks as an administrator, a teacher, a student, a parent, advisor, counselor, whatever your role is, there's some applicable use for generative AI. I want to be mindful of your time and looking at the time. We could probably sit here for another few hours talking about the same topic. As we close out this session, are there any final comments that anyone would like to share around this topic for our listeners?
Maybe I can give one example of something I do with my children. I recognize that I should probably help them more with their writing. And I personally have used generative AI to work with them. I've said, hey, ChatGPT, could you find the essay questions for the University of California application and rewrite them so that it would be appropriate for a sixth grader? The questions, which would be way too abstract, also become very, very applicable. My sixth grader can be, oh, that's a very interesting question. Let me talk about it. Not only for writing, but one thing that Carlos mentioned the first day we ever came as parents was every day when you drive home with your kids, talk with your kids, ask them something. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these prompts, I was like, I'm not sure what to ask my kids. I was like, hey, AI, can you give me some prompts that my sixth grader will want to talk about? And it gives me a list. And sure enough, they're very, very interested in answering these questions. So, for example, if the generative AI comes up with, hey, at what point in the past would you want to meet your mom or dad? At what age would you want to meet them? And what would you ask them? And then, boom, instantly, it's like, it's great. It's like, oh, one of them was, oh, I'd like to meet my dad back when he was in college because he claims he was really fit. And I want to see, is he really that fit, right? That sort of thing, right? But it opens up a half-hour conversation. And so I think generative AI is very powerful for things like that. Right, things that I, as a parent, when, you know, I hit a roadblock and generative AI gave me tools.
I'll share a really simple productivity trick for the teachers out there who are listening.
Let's hear it.
When you're putting together an assignment on Schoology, editing the text in Schoology can sometimes be a little cumbersome.
Yes, yes.
So I use this all the time. I will write up my lesson plan in ChatGPT, have it do the formatting, and then the last thing I type, now rewrite this in HTML suitable for pasting into Schoology. And it will spit it all out in HTML, and I can just paste it into Schoology, and it has all the formatting the way I want it and everything like that.
I'm going to
very big time saver.
I'm using that trick.
Everybody should steal that idea.
Yeah.
For administrators, I would encourage them that if they haven't started the AI conversation with their faculty and their community, that they need to start, because the landscape is changing so fast. It's already here, but the things that are going to be available are going to be here so quickly, and it's just going to overtake everything and everyone if they don't start that conversation now. So start having it with your faculty, with your teachers, with your parents, with your entire community. Reach out for help if you need to, and start talking about the ways that you can start its implementation, even if it's slow, so that you have a goal and a light at the end of the tunnel with AI.
My piece that I'm excited about is efficiency, and I'm looking forward to exponentially better efficiency with regards to systems in the school, all kinds of systems, and just what can be accomplished once you've cut your time down significantly. I now have the time and energy to go so much further than I ever could before. And that's really what my hopes are for AI as it develops.
Well, thank you all for joining us on our podcast today. This wraps up episode 12 with Principal Carlos Lauchu, Assistant Principal Joshua Rosenthal, our Teacher Innovation Lab Technology and AP Computer Science teacher, Christopher Bradfield, and Parent STEM Advisor to the Science Academy STEM Magnet, Tom Tsao. Thank you all for tuning in, and we will catch you on the next episode of the Leading for Impact podcast, brought to you by the LAUSD Instructional Technology Initiative 2023. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.